What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Rankings Podcast. I'm your host, Nate List. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And with me, of course, is Alexander McKenzie. You can find him on Twitter at Jacked Up on Mountain Dew. Now, Alexander, listen, last episode, we came in, we hit some of these smaller name players, gave some future analysis, some predictive analysis, talking about some guys that really had been known. They were on the radar, but I don't think Dynasty owners quite had maybe the confidence to pursue them or had maybe a rock solid general feeling about what their future may be like. I feel like over the past couple weeks, as we've done some of this analysis, a lot of it is kind of rang true in some cases with these players. And so it has felt accurate, but this week we wanted to shake things up a little bit. Listen, we're entering week 11 of the NFL season. We kind of know where many of our fantasy teams are standing. And for those of us that have to just continue setting lineups till the end of the season with nothing really to play for in 2023, we're focused on 2024, which means looking at these incoming rookies, looking at the situation of players on your roster as it may factor in whether they get traded, whether they're future free agents, or looking at situations with players on your roster and how a quarterback situation could change a wide receiver that has maybe not fired quite yet, or how offensive line additions to a team could help a quarterback that's on your team that hasn't performed yet. So this week, we are going to use a mock draft, which just came out, I think, a day ago. 33rd team. This one here, Connor Livesay, I think that's what we agreed his last name was. Yeah. Livesay released a 2024 NFL mock draft latest first round predictions after week 11. So still early, but we have enough college football, and I think there's been enough knowledge to have some pretty fair indicators of at least the upper part of most of these positional groups. So we're going to get into here. There are some semi-surprising locations for some players. You and I have talked about this a little bit. We're going to rip through the skill position players. So you're not going to hear us talk about offensive linemen, defensive linemen, nothing like that, but we're going to hit the quarterbacks, obviously, running backs. There's one tight end that snuck in here in the wide receiver position. So before we jump into that, Alexander, how are you feeling? Are you prepared for this?
Absolutely. I've got a little bit of college football, you know, watching it a little bit and looking at some of this data. Excited to help some of these guys out that are, you know, looking at their team saying, man, what happened? And if you're trying to figure out what to look forward to in this upcoming class, because this class is pretty damn loaded. So excited to talk about it.
Now, admittedly, I'm not being paid by PFF, although we should be getting paid by PFF. What we're going to be doing is simultaneously as we're running through these players, because right now, you know, Alexander and I have a really big repository of advanced data that is really hard to find pretty much anywhere else on the internet, which will eventually be available in some fashion to you guys. But until that point, PFF really is doing the Lord's work in many cases when it comes to college prospect evaluation. Now, much of this is subjective in nature, right? A lot of it, you know, it's funny, for as many advanced metrics are, you know, as there are in football, the ref will still spot the ball like arbitrarily on a play. So there's a lot of arbitrary nature to this. But with that being said, we're going to be using the PFF big board that they currently have set up, which, and I'll just click Caleb Williams here just off the start so you guys can see. Really cool visual layout for these players. Shows you at least the last 3 years for these guys, unless you're a quarterback that, you know, transfer and has 5 years in college football, goes through a lot of their advanced metrics. So we're going to cite a number of these things as we kind of rifle through some of these current situations. So again, shout out to PFF for just having one of the sickest interfaces on the internet so far. Kudos to them. As the geeks we are, we respect it. So, all right, well, let's jump into this thing. Obviously, as we roll through, first name that pops up here, Arizona Cardinals, Marvin Harrison Jr. No real surprise there, as we've heard about this more and more, the drumbeat through the offseason. The big difference, though, is that Marquise Brown does have an expiring contract at the end of the season. Arizona just got Kyler Murray back. He looks a lot like the Kyler Murray of old. I'm assuming you're going to agree that this situation would just be absolutely electric for Marvin Harrison as a dynasty owner.
I mean, yeah, I mean, people are throwing the word out, generational. You know, obviously they talked about it with Bijan last year. This is a generational prospect at wide receiver. 6'4", 205, probably going to test in an amazing way, probably low 4.4s. If he runs 4.3, people are literally going to lose their mind. But the stat that really kind of stands out for me is, you know, the ability to catch the deep balls, right? Eighth in deep yards, 13 deep catches, which is tied for fifth in college football. And then one of the biggest stats everyone likes to reference also is the 3.4 yards per route run. That alone, you know, that's an insane number for a receiver that big, who's potentially explosive as well. I mean, and you look at the yards per reception, 17.6 with 13 scores, and the season's not even over. Still a few more games left. Paired with Kyler Murray, who, again, we've referenced it so many times. We talked about it with Trey McBride in the last video. This is a team that's going to pass a significant amount every year. Kyler Murray has established himself as as one of the top elite options at quarterback in the NFL. And they've paid him accordingly. Don't give me this stuff about they should trade him and go and get Caleb Williams. Kyler Murray has solidified himself as an elite quarterback in the NFL. It's evident by the stats. Maybe it's not attributed so much to the wins yet. I think with having high draft picks like this and getting players like Marvin Harrison Jr. and improving other pieces of the team like they did with the offensive line last year, you'll probably get more respect in the national media. But I think Kyler Murray, deservedly so, tied to Marvin Harrison would be, and honestly, we talked about this pre-show. People were selling the house, right, for Bijan Robinson. They were like, literally, here's the keys to my house. You can have my car. You can have my kids. I'm going to go give me the number one pick in this upcoming draft so I can draft Bijan. If Marvin Harrison Jr. goes to Arizona, him tied with Kyler, I mean, you remember the numbers that DeAndre Hopkins was putting up with tied to Kyler Murray when he was still, really productive and had productive years left. Man, he gets a 21-year-old, elite 6'4 wide receiver that is considered generational with 3.4 yards per route run. Sign me up. I mean, that's almost to me. Again, we talk about these target hog wide receivers, these elite guys like Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase. I mean, what makes them so special? Not only are they uber talented receivers, they're also talented or tied to talented, top 10 worthy quarterbacks. Kirk Cousins, maybe argument a top 12 or whatever, but he's an elite passer of the football. And then you also have obviously Joe Burrow throwing to Jamar Chase. Marvin Harrison tied to Kyler Murray. I mean, this is going to be a guy who's going to be in a top three conversation at the position for years to come.
He's ridiculous. it's a slam dunk. It's easy. If he goes to Arizona and he's playing with Kyler Murray, Kyler Murray has shown that he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in football. He's one of the best deep ball passers in college football. And that's probably a part of the game for Marvin Harrison Jr. that's really not even been unlocked to this point, because despite the fact that he's got 532 deep receiving yards and he's number 13 in deep catches, he has just 21 deep targets. I think the most in college football right now is 32, so I think he's like top 50 in total deep targets right now. But that's an area of the game that really hasn't even been fully unlocked for him. And then if we go back to, 2022 on the Arizona Cardinals, the last time that they did have DeAndre Hopkins and they did have Marquise Brown, we talk about this with quarterbacks like C.J. Stroud, most recently, whether it's Stafford, whether it's Rodgers, these quarterbacks that have target lock. When Hopkins and Brown last played together, Hopkins 10.7 targets per game, Marquise Brown 8.9. So those are both incredible numbers for either guy. Now, if Marquise Brown walks this offseason, which they may or may not be forced to do, I don't know that they have to. They could keep that stretch receiver in the offense. Marvin Harrison Jr., when we talk about vacated targets, that's ridiculous. Like, vacated targets is not a thing. Targets are earned. But when the competition for targets doesn't exist and you're a high target earner, the sky is the limit. So there's just no question. Him at number two to Arizona is ridiculous. I love it. You love it. Sell the farm for him. Bijan is hurt. Families across the globe because of Arthur Murray and the hopes and dreams there. But this one's really interesting. I think that this, to me, and you and I have both talked about this a little bit. So the Mac Jones experiment doesn't work. the Bailey Zappe trial emergency approval quarterback doesn't work. He can't nail any high draft players. Bill Belichick can't nail quarterbacks with early selection, can't nail wide receivers, can't nail running backs, can't nail tight ends. But here we are. Caleb Williams is mocked to New England at 3. And this feels to us, and we've talked about this, and we're going to get to another quarterback later that feels like it makes way more sense near 20. But Caleb Williams with Bill Belichick, who very clearly needed Tom Brady more than Tom Brady needed him, is now going to usher in Caleb Williams into an offense that's got very few weapons. And it all feels like downside right now. And my question to you is, how confident are we in Caleb Williams if Belichick doesn't, let's say he's gone in 2 years and you shake it up in the middle of this guy's sort of like blooming start of a career, and who do you go get? You go get the hot college coach, you go get the top OC. Like it just feels like a lot of opportunity to screw up a really great prospect's potential career here.
Absolutely. I mean, we've talked about it before with Trevor Lawrence, with Urban Meyer, and now obviously Lawrence is showing that he's not exactly the player that he was, you know, touted to be. But you know, the argument could be made that we don't know really what Caleb Williams is, right? The argument between Kyler Murray and Caleb Williams with Arizona and stuff like that, they should sell Murray and go and get Caleb Williams. We know what Kyler Murray is. We don't know what Caleb Williams is in the NFL. We know that a lot of people are pretty damn high on him, especially even PFF. Look at his grades throughout the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, especially last year, 4,500 yards, 42 passing touchdowns to 5 interceptions. Now on top of the, you know, the insane rushing ability as well, and the off-script throws, the arm talent, he's the full package. But a lot of these players, especially quarterback, it's about situation. And so again, what kind of situation is Caleb Williams walking into with New England when they have zero weapons on this offense? I mean, obviously DeMario Douglas is somebody we would like, but he's not a game changer. He's not somebody that Caleb Williams can lean on. It feels like this is one of those situations where, you know, you've got Caleb Williams running around trying to save this offense with Bill Belichick. And honestly, it just feels like two different personalities. So, you know, freestyling Caleb Williams with the, you know, the rigid Bill Belichick, who runs very, very, you know, strict schemes and changes it up every single week. But the talent is through the roof. I mean, second in deep yards. The other interesting thing was second in screen yards. We were talking about that pre-show. Potentially just maybe they have the weapons and stuff. But again, Caleb Williams is a freak, you know, is a freak at the talent of the position. It's evident. You know, you see it on tape. The numbers are there. But again, he also plays for, you know, USC, who has been ascending with, you know, always been great at getting recruits. Oklahoma has been always been great at getting recruits. What happens when he goes to a team where there's no talent at the wide receiver position, or, you know, barely any talent at the tight end? You need these type of players. You need on that offense for someone to develop, because then if they don't develop properly, it significantly hinders them for their future. I mean, you could make the argument, what happens with Patrick Mahomes if he landed, you know, in a situation like this, right? And now look at Patrick Mahomes with weapons that, you know, people that are not catching passes and stuff like that. If a player that is comp to Caleb Williams is going to go to an offense with worse, you know, receivers than Kansas City, how well is Caleb Williams going to do?
Right. And I think that's a great point. Like, we have seen Patrick Mahomes at his absolute best. And then you look at him this year, you know, lowest touchdown rate in his career, highest interception rate of his career. Like, things are down a little bit. And you would argue with Kelce and the age and the health, like, he's never had less weaponry around him than he does now. Obviously, leaving the Tyreek Hill universe, coming to this, is very different. But yeah, that's kind of the question. We also talked to the pressure to sack conversion rate with him. While USC is currently, I believe we said that they were ranked number 26 in pass blocking. Let's pull that up right now by grade. Number 26 overall in pass blocking grade. So still a top 30 offensive line, you know, in the conference that they're in. And then you see that as well. So obviously these types of things can be drive killers, but as we've talked about, he has the mobility. There's nobody out there that's bold enough to tell you that this guy's not going to hit. There are people out there that are manifesting red flags, but to me, no quarterback can necessarily ascend a situation that's not good. And again, we believe Bill Belichick is a great coach. Seems like more defensively. He's been better finding these late round guys. He's been better. He's a hard nosed coach, as we mentioned. But look what happened to Justin Fields. Justin Fields doesn't look like the player we believed he was going to be, you know, coming out of college. Zach Wilson absolutely does not fire. Trey Lance does not fire. There's a number, and again, I get it. Different production levels. Like we've seen it with this guy, but Trevor Lawrence is truly sort of that cautionary tale, as you mentioned. Like, still haven't come close to the ceiling at which you bought him for. Right. And he's only trending down now. He's trending towards like QB 10 in Dynasty at this point. And when we bring in some of these guys, Drake May and Caleb Williams, and a number of these other players, they're only going to nudge him further as these young players that are in new situations come in. So, you know, Trevor Lawrence could be the QB 11, 12, 13. His numbers have been good, and he's probably going to be a value at that point. But it's players like this that are going to kind of push him out. But I would say you really hope that New England does what they've never done before, and invest in one of these guys, because yeah, you go get Caleb Williams and immediately, like, who is he throwing to? Like, what are your options? Right. So, I think that could be a struggle immediately for him, but again, perhaps he's good enough to ascend it, but he's going to have to go Justin Fields and then also throw the ball well. Drake May to the Chicago Bears. This feels like all but certain at this point. I know that there's people out there that told me earlier in the year that there's no way that the Bears would move on from Justin Fields. It's very possible that there's a team out there that would take Justin Fields, you know, send a high day two pick, whatever the equivalent is that Chicago needs to move off of Fields, who's still on a rookie contract, and go with a guy like May, so they could add some draft capital in 2023, probably into 2024 and maybe into 2025 for him. But Drake May is an interesting name. And at this point in time, Justin Fields just needs an opportunity to go elsewhere, because this situation is just like, it is just falling apart in Chicago.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, it's evident the coaching staff is not that great. He's gone through what, two head coaches in his career so far?
Yeah, I think
at Chicago. You know, that's not great for QB development. It's hard for you to succeed at that level, with going through different coaches and different schemes and stuff like that. So yeah, I think we talked about this pre-show again. I think they both the Bears need a clean slate, and Justin Fields deserves a clean slate to go to another team that, you know, potentially will, utilize his skill set, a little bit better. But with whoever comes in, especially if it's Drake May, they're coming into a situation where they just spent, you know, a top pick on Darnell Wright. You've got DJ Moore at wide receiver. You've got Cole Kmet, who's played really well this year. And then you top that with, if you look at the top of that mock draft, they got one of the best offensive tackle, you know, arguably the best offensive tackle in this draft class. So this is a guy who's going to be quarterback, who's going to be going in, who is a, you know, super, super accurate and effective quarterback in Drake May from UNC. That's going to be going into a great offensive line, great weapons, you know, a number of running backs. We still haven't really seen Roschon Johnson, you know, hit as what we wanted. We've seen spurts of it. That Deontay Foreman's been playing well. They got Khalil Herbert. It's a better situation if you look at it, especially if, you know, they trade Justin Fields for some picks. They can use that to, again, shore up this offensive line. And then Drake May, who's, you know, it kind of gets overshadowed by, you know, how good Caleb Williams has been. This guy has just been a monster producer the last 2 years. I mean, 4,200 passing yards, 37 touchdowns and 7 picks. He's, you know, he's first in deep yards.
Yep.
And slowly but surely, he's gotten, you know, this North Carolina program has started to turn up some really good players. You know, obviously talked about Sam Howell in that system and has played really well in the NFL, number one in passing yards right now. But Drake May is another one of those guys that, if you look at, you know, his production is just absolutely insane. He's got the arm talent. He's super accurate. You know, coaches will love, you know, all his intangibles on top of the arm talent. that I think he goes into a really good situation with the Chicago Bears, especially being tied to DJ Moore.
Yeah. You know, number 22 in passer rating on deep targets. I think that when we were looking at his total attempts, he's number five in college football in deep ball attempts. So not a surprise that he's number one in deep passing yards, but his completion percentage has been reasonable as well. He's number 16 in college football in deep completion percentage. So brings that big play aspect to the game, as you mentioned, brings the accuracy to the game. Turnover worthy play rate is like, it's amazing. 1.6%, right. Very, very low, which has been one of the bigger headaches with a guy like Justin Fields. Justin Fields brings a dynamic nature that nobody in most draft classes will ever bring to the table. But at some point, these teams are looking for stability. You need to have building blocks. And the off-script playmaking, we have to utilize his legs. Like, how many times have we listened to people talk about Justin Fields and say, you have to do X? If you have to do X with your quarterback, you're already in trouble. So I think coming in with just a baseline of capability with a guy like this is really big. And again, as you mentioned, they already have some offensive line help that, you know, they're being mocked another offensive lineman at number one, as you brought up here, and then Drake May at four. DJ Moore is awesome, and who knows what else they could pull off in this draft. So really like that. Now, we don't have to move very far to the next quarterback. Number five, Bo Nix out of Oregon. This is a guy that, again, you and I talked about a little bit pre-show. It's really interesting in New York because they still have Daniel Jones under an absurd contract for, I think, the next, we said, till the end of 2025. So he's not going anywhere. So it's really hard to say what they would do with Bo Nix here, but 33rd team has him going to the New York Giants. What do you think?
I mean, again, the Daniel Jones has, we've talked about, again, we've talked a lot about this all before the show. Daniel Jones is really kind of just the average quarterback. I think really what has separated him so far, especially in the NFL, but also in fantasy, is his rushing prowess. He's a pretty good rusher, but the injuries are starting to stockpile on him, and he significantly negatively regressed in his really his ability to throw the ball. I mean, he got a huge contract for $168 million for 4 years because he threw 15 touchdowns this last season.
Right.
So you could attribute that they don't have weapons, but obviously they went and got, you know, Darren Waller. The only concern what I would have for Bo Nix going into this situation is really, I don't think the offensive line really has played that well for the Giants. You couple with that, like, who is he throwing to in this offense? It's, again, one of those situations where a lot of slot receivers, you know, Wandale Robinson, Paris Campbell, you know, Sterling Shepard. They attempted to do Galladay years ago, and then really haven't seen anything from him. And then obviously they got Darren Waller, who is, what, 32 years old and cannot shake the hamstring injury. But some of the stuff about Bo Nix that I think the teams will love is, number one, obviously, you know, people are going to attest that the negative for him is he had to transfer from Auburn to, you know, Oregon. But again, this was a highly touted prospect, and he was a young kid. So, but if you look at his grades over the years, especially from 2021, 2022, 2023,
yeah. Yep.
Significantly yeah. gets better over time. And some yep. of the things we talked about with these other quarterbacks, guys like Trey Lance, guys like Mitch Trubisky, who drafted so high, obviously people weren't that high on that, but they didn't play a lot of games. This is someone who's played a lot of games. He's playing his best ball right now. And he last 2 years, almost 3,500 yards in these 11 games, you know, 3,500 yards this year to 35 touchdowns and two picks. So his turnover, we talked about it with Drake May, turnover worthy play rate, 0.7%, first in college football. Yeah. Obviously, Oregon is a good team, but you can't deny how well Bo Nix has played with 77% completion percentage. Ever since he's gone to Oregon and he's got more games in, he's got a better scheme. There's another really good quarterback that came out of this, you know, this Oregon team is Justin Herbert. Obviously, he's not the same player, but a lot of traits that coaches like with the arm talent, and especially how efficient and that he is with the football. I think Bo Nix is an interesting player that could probably carry the team and be smart with the ball and not turn over. But I really worry about this Giants front office making the right decisions to put the right weapons around him, especially on the offensive line. Because if you go back to that offensive line ranking, Oregon's the number one ranked offensive line in pass blocking. So it could be attributed to how well he's playing is obviously tied to his, how well his offensive line's playing.
I think it's fair. And again, we always have to sort of assimilate, you know, the potential of, and again, we look at the growth of some of these quarterbacks in their play. Is the growth in their play because they linked up with wide receiver X in college? We're going to get to that here in a little bit. Were they more successful because the evolution of the pass blocking in front of them? But at the end of the day, these guys still have to throw the ball. A turnover-worthy play rate less than 1% is unbelievable. Right. I mean, that the pressure to sack conversion rate very low. Again, could very well be attributed to the fact that he's got a line, but he's also getting the ball out in 2.42 seconds, which is top 13. So it's hard for a pass rush to probably even really get to him with that amount of time. Again, when we go back to Caleb Williams, I think it was like 3.1. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a half second longer. And again, he's more mobile in the pockets. You're getting that. But again, this is an exact, you know, replica of like what a rock solid safe quarterback can look like in an offense. And again, you talked about weapons. What about T. Higgins as a free agent? Doesn't this seem like the paramount landing spot? And we're looking at some of the free agents on the list here, and it's sorted kind of funky, but here's T. Higgins. Here's Michael Pittman. We know that Mike Evans is a free agent, DJ Chark. But T. Higgins is one of these guys that you're like, man, if he could go to New York, which has got a ton of allure, Big Apple, get an opportunity to play in a large market and kind of get away from that. Because we also don't know, like, how badly T wants to be the guy. I mean, he's never had more than, I think, 111 targets in a season. He's never going to be targeted more than Ja'Marr Chase. So this is a really interesting selection. And he might end up becoming sort of the value pick at quarterback in your rookie drafts, just purely for the fact that the Giants don't look great on paper, per se, and there's a bunch of other QBs.
And the thing that again, that stood out to me the most out of all these guys, the pressure grade was significantly higher than the other two players. I think the best I saw was like 61 as like the pressure grade, but like Bo Nix had an 85.3 pressure grade. So ability to throw under pressure, those are great traits to have, especially entering the NFL. And then obviously the average time to throw, he could just be one of those like rhythm passers, and maybe they change up this offense with Daboll. So
sure. Sure. No, he's great, man. I think it'll be an interesting quarterback location for someone to go, especially with that Daniel Jones contract. Okay, Atlanta. Now, everybody that's got a piece of the offensive weaponry in Atlanta is like, God, can we get some help? We know Arthur Smith will ruin this for all of us, but Michael Penix Jr. to the Atlanta Falcons, kind of was hoping he would go to Seattle, back up Geno, and then take over from there. But apparently 33rd team thinks he's going to go much higher than Seattle has a pick. Desmond Ridder, not the answer. Nobody else at quarterback in this offense is the answer. So here we are, really good quarterback steps into a situation where he has maybe the best running back in football, second best potential running back in football. Drake London at wide receiver, Kyle Pitts at tight end. Assuming that, you know, Arthur Smith can't fuck this recipe up for everybody, is it possible that he could unlock what it is that everybody's been hoping to get their hands on in Dynasty with these assets?
I would really hope so. He's a very, very good prospect. He's a very much a pocket passer. He doesn't really have very, if any, rushing yards on the year. So he's a very dynamic passer. 66% completion percentage. That's within, obviously, threshold. 3,700 yards to 30 touchdowns. We've got a decent pressure grade up there at 67.1. All his passing grades in general, deep ball passing, fourth in college football. Again, we talked about that 1.4 turnover worthy plate tied for fourth in college football. I mean, he's got great grades overall, and he's gotten better the last 2 years. Obviously, I believe he was at Indiana before this. But
ACL tear too.
ACL tear too. Yeah, he was playing really, really well over in the Big Ten with Indiana. And then that kind of, ruined his season. But, I mean, he's had a, career ascendance. here in with Washington, but you know, they've got dynamic weapons. But again, it's evident by his arm talent here alone. The accuracy, I think, is what really will highlight with this guy, that he's played really, really well. And his 7.2% time for ninth in big time throw rate. So he's making some big time throws. He's a very, very good pocket passer that hopefully, again, that's the concern going to Arthur Smith. You know, he's kind of like these, you know, mobile style quarterbacks. And I just don't think Michael Penix Jr. is a, you know, one of those mobile style quarterbacks. I think he's more of a, that traditional pocket passer, but is very, very accurate. I'd be interested to see how he would fit into that run heavy scheme. I don't know if he would necessarily utilize his skill set properly.
It's really interesting because when you sort and you look at deep ball pass attempts and you look at the top four quarterbacks in deep passing yards, it is the four that we're going to touch on. But it's Drake May at one, Caleb Williams at two, Jaden Daniels at three, Michael Penix at four. What's interesting about Penix at four is that of all the three quarterbacks above him, he has the lowest yards per attempt. I mean, just for perspective, Jaden Daniels is 25.5. Penix Jr. is 15.3 yards per attempt. So there's a lot of yak, I think, built into what's going on here. But I mean, again, that's a guy that's hitting guys in stride. That might be a little different than the guy that's just throwing deep and has the arm to get it to a player that's winning in coverage, whether it's, you know, Neighbors or whoever it is. Again, we're going to get to some of these names. It's a really interesting profile. We've seen the ascension year over year, as you know, probably touched on here. But the idea of him going to Atlanta is a really just a very interesting spot with the O-line, with the weapons. So that might be, I mean, that might be one of the, again, I know I said this about Knicks to New York, but this just, there's already all the weapons. It's already built in for you the day you show up. It's turnkey, right?
Yeah. I mean, getting Kyle Pitts, you know, obviously we talked about Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Bijan Robinson, you know, one of the best offensive lines in football. It's like a perfect landing spot for one of these rookie quarterbacks, especially, you know, if they continue to do this run heavy scheme, they can lean on the run game for him in his rookie year, and he can significantly get better over time. That's a great situation for these rookie quarterbacks. And that's like the recipe to, you know, get these guys to develop.
It's really interesting because here we go at pick 11 to the New York Jets. Here is probably a major reason why the numbers that Penix Jr. has put up look the way they do. Roma Dunze of Washington is mocked to the Jets with Garrett Wilson. And presumably we get a healthy Aaron Rodgers next year. Really interesting because I think that there's some conversation at play here. Number one, is Garrett Wilson still the alpha dog in this offense without question at that point? And two, how good is this receiver group going to be with these two guys?
Number one, it would be a fair question. I think obviously Garrett Wilson has played with significantly poor quarterback play that you would have to assume that even if Roma Dunze, who is incredibly talented wide receiver, comes into this offense, that I still think it's the Garrett Wilson show at number one, with Roma Dunze being that like high tier wide receiver two that we all talk about. But going into Roma Dunze with Garrett Wilson, it would just be, if we get a healthy Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Rodgers can play one more year of his above average quarterback play, these two guys will be, you know, screaming values, especially, you know, if you're, you know, wanting to get, you can't get Marvin Harrison Jr., you're going to get Roma Dunze for at least a year with, you know, tied to Aaron Rodgers. So that's amazing to grab. But the stats are insane. 6'3", 215. I would love to see how well he tests because his yards per route run. There's three guys in this class that their yards per route run are insane, above three. One of them is Roma Dunze. The other one is Marvin Harrison Jr. The other one we're talking about here in a bit. But 3.03 yards per route run is insane for a guy 6'3", 215. Great grade versus man coverage. You love to see that's really good for guys that play on the outside. Tied for second in deep catches, deep yards sixth. And again, this symbiosis between him and Michael Penix has been really, really damn good for the last 2 years. 1,100 yards last year, seven touchdowns, 1,200 yards, jumped to 18.3 yards per reception. So this guy's winning downfield. He's really good contested catch receiver, 68.4% on contested catches. And if he tests well, man, this is one of those guys who will rise up the board. I don't think he'll be this low. And he'll be in conversation of, you know, with the other top 10 wide receivers.
Yeah, he's definitely one of these guys that everybody's going to want to get their hands on, especially depending on where he lands. This would be an interesting situation because the problem is, and we've talked about this before, and I think currently when we look at Garrett Wilson has a 47.35% percent of the team's air yards with the New York Jets. So, I mean, he's seeing a lot of the work, and I'm sure some of that pie is going to be divvied up, but it's like any number two in any offense is really struggling to find room to produce. Year one is a very difficult time to produce. Aaron Rodgers has supported two wide receivers in the past, but they were also more veteran and seasoned at the time, and Aaron Rodgers was about 6 years younger. So little difference here with the Jets in that situation, but I don't think it's the ideal landing spot. I think as we've learned, again, we talked about this on a podcast or two a few weeks ago. It's great in theory to play opposite a great wide receiver, but as it's proved itself time and time again, Justin Jefferson will be the guy that sees 180 targets. Jordan Addison will be the guy that sees 125, 130 targets, and he'll be happy about it, but you're never going to get that premier production. You would almost hope that he would go to a team where he could be the guy, because this really throttles some of that upside. Because again, you're going to tell yourself a tale. You're going to say, oh, you know, it's great. Let Garrett Wilson have his 12 targets a game and take all the heavy coverage, and he'll just get his 6.5 and he'll thrive. Like, you just don't want that. So I don't love the situation, personally speaking, especially knowing that you're going to lose an elite Hall of Fame level quarterback in some period of time, not too far down the road. And then what? And then what happens?
Yeah, you have no idea what happens with that. So yeah, again, it's great in theory, but it's really kind of a toss up, really, how well he would play. And if he's that damn good and challenges him for that one spot, but still, what's that? How many targets really is that? You know, in general, doesn't thrust him for what the price will be, especially if he goes that high.
It's not what you guys think it is. And again, we can even go back to last year. Again, I've already said this before, I'll say it again. DeVonta Smith had a fairly historical year in terms of wide receiver twos in an offense, and he only averaged 8 targets a game, which is good, but that's like wide receiver two range. That's not elite wide receiver one range. And you guys can go ahead and check the math in 2023, A.J. Brown to DeVonta Smith, if you want to see how that division of pie worked out, or that whole, oh, I like having receivers opposite elite guys. You don't love it so much anymore. Okay, this one's weird. Los Angeles Rams taking Brock Bowers, tight end out of Georgia. Now, listen, to the audience members that are like, Bowers is amazing. Bowers is a phenom. You guys did this same thing with Kyle Pitts, okay? We've been down this road. You're going to know this time's different. Sean McVay, he knows. He knows how to use the tight end. Guys, listen, we're not sure that anybody necessarily knows how to use the tight end. Like, it's been so fluky. You and I talked about this pre-show. All the guys that carry the position, Mark Andrews, third round pick, by the way, as you brought up to me, they had already taken a tight end in the first round in that same draft when they backed it up with him. George Kittle, fifth round guy. Travis Kelce, third round guy. You guys think that if they knew these guys were Hall of Fame caliber players, they wouldn't have taken them where they're taking Brock Bowers? They don't know. Nobody knew. It's just, there's other tight ends in this class. There's other players in the league that Rams could send a third round pick for and make some sort of move. I just, again, Bowers at 13 to me is a weird spot. I know people love him. Going with McVay and Stafford, who's presumably here for a little bit, that might be the saving grace of the situation, but go ahead. Bowers right here.
I think again, the profile, you look at him overall, you know, at 86.6 receiving grade, and that's his low, right? I mean, 90 in 2022 and then 92 as a freshman, right? And he had 880 yards as a freshman as a tight end with 13 touchdowns. And then followed it up with 942 with seven touchdowns. The numbers are amazing, especially 2.74 yards per route run at a tight end position. So I understand where the talent is, right? The generational term comes with Brock Bowers at the tight end position. But obviously, you referenced Kyle Pitts. My concern is, where does he fit in this offense where he's viable enough to earn enough targets, right? Like, we've got, you know, the darling of 2023, Puka Nacua, right, in this offense. Obviously, Cooper Kupp is going to have a target share. Look how much Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp have kind of, you know, hurt each other in terms of the target share. And then you're expecting Brock Bowers to come in and then earn, you know, one of these top five Dalton Kincaid type, you know, target shares that I just don't see that happening in this situation. And again, you know, I'd be curious at how much time left is on Tyler Higbee's contract that they don't ease Brock Bowers in. And this is one of those picks you spend, you know, your mid first round pick on Brock Bowers. You're so excited. The talent's there. And then you're, you know, 2 years later, you're offering him up for a second round pick to somebody else. Right. The talent is extremely evident there. And if they use him, you know, in a certain way, I just think that there's more needs on this team, like offensive line, to help out, you know, help out Matthew Stafford, that Brock Bowers could go to another team where he could, you know, have more time to develop or have more opportunity. I think that Nacua and Kyren Williams eats into that target share as well, that those guys are not going away. So they're going to still be there. That I don't really know how Brock Bowers fits here. And it would be really feel like a landmine if you're drafting him in the first round of Dynasty Rookie Drafts.
Yeah, and you're seeing, I believe Tyler Higbee has a 9.1% pass blocking rate right now. So again, that is the thing that just never comes up. Like, it's concerning that if they get utilized, and again, this is a team with a lot of deficiencies on the offensive line and a lot of struggles, you don't think that he's going to come in there and have to make a presence known as a pass blocker as well? Suddenly that makes it more difficult. So again, if he's TJ Hockenson, if he's George Kittle, fine. But if he's anybody on the other side of that scale, you don't want him pass blocking at a rate this high. And I believe right now in college football, he's pass blocking at a rate of, I think it was 8.2% this year. In 2022, it was 4.5%. This year, 8.2%. As a freshman, 9.3%. So again, cautionary tale. The pass blocking can really screw things up and kind of limit some of that target opportunity. But again, nobody's saying he's not an incredibly talented player, but
no. We
literally just did this with Kyle Pitts. I mean, literally, the tears have barely dried on our face, and we're already going to this next level with Brock Bowers. So kudos to you guys, because I know you're going to do it, by the way. But like, let me harp on this one for a minute. I know you're going to do it because the Dalton Kincaid and the Sam Laporta and it's the resurgence. The NFL has changed its mind suddenly until it just doesn't manifest itself yet again. And again, the tight end position historically takes a few years. Look at TJ Hockenson. Look at George Kittle. Look at any of these guys. There was not these immense year one breakouts. So what you're seeing now is false representation of probably the reality of the position. But if you do produce early, I think at the tight end position, that often is a great signal for the talent that's probably there from an offensive standpoint. But nonetheless, I digress. Don't love it. Go ahead.
And also, it almost feels like this tight end class is like the 2014 wide receiver class, that it was so damn good with these first year breakouts that everyone is expecting the following years that if any guy who has an elite profile that is coming out, that's going to, you know, they're going to be a part of this. Oh, it's happening and blah, blah, blah. I think it's just evident that some of these guys coming out this year were just that damn talented and that damn good that it's really hard to do that. And I think we should recognize that.
2014's wide receiver class was the equivalent of getting drunk and then waking up drunk and then still doing drunk things the next day. 2015 absolutely screwed people because they thought there's no way nobody can miss. 2014 was too good. This episode's never going to end. Okay, Las Vegas Raiders, God save the queen. They need help at quarterback. Jaden Daniels, quarterback LSU, mocked to them at 14. I know you've got some opinions on Jaden Daniels, but I will say if it was the sit and select method, this is a great spot for Vegas to not really have to do much and then end up with a quarterback that's better than literally every option that they have currently. Some people out there will tell you that Aiden O'Connell is better, yet to be determined. Go ahead.
He's gotten significantly better over time. I mean, the jump from 2022 to 2023 was super significant. I mean, he went from 7.5 yards per attempt to 11.6. His completion percentage has always been pretty good. He's an elite rusher. He's rushed for almost 1,000 yards last year, and then he's on that pace this year. He's a dynamic player overall. I just concerned with the, you know, he tied to someone like Malik Nabers, who will be the next, spoiler alert, the next guy we eventually, you know, talk about. Malik Nabers is playing at such an elite level in the deep quadrants of the field that I feel like it could be what's helping Jaden Daniels. That's not to take away from Jaden Daniels. It's just, I wonder if this is just evident of the, you know, talent around him. Obviously he's a Heisman candidate and he's playing phenomenally, 3,500 passing yards on top of like rushing super well, 36 touchdowns with 4 interceptions, great passer rating. I just think there's so much to do in the NFL. It's a great landing spot for a situation like this. So I think it's 1 year of crazy great production, but you can make the argument that there's other guys that have done this. I think to me, it's kind of, I think the talent is evident. He has an elite rusher. I just question, sometimes we obsess over these guys that have the rushing prowess, and he's able to throw the ball pretty damn deep. But I feel like it's also kind of what, you know, Malik Nabers' effect on him. But I would be happy to be proven wrong at this point. But he's playing super, super well. It's a great landing spot for a quarterback with, you know, Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers. Offensive line needs a little bit of work. But Jaden Daniels would be in a good spot if he could go and play for the Raiders without those weaponry. But I would like to see a little bit more. He's more of a question mark to me out of this QB class.
But correct me if I'm wrong, we're on year 5 of the quarterback position.
Sure. I mean, that's true. That is true at this point. So,
and again, not a knock, but you're right. Like we've seen this with guys like Josh Allen when they get Stephon Diggs. We've seen this with quarterbacks when they add an elite weapon. Yeah, you get a receiver like that, and admittedly he was there the year prior, but you get these guys, they ascend together, great talent. Can help unlock other great players. And, you know, as you can see there on the big board, you know, deep targets, 3rd in all of college football, obviously pushing it downfield, turnover-worthy play rate, still pretty low. We could pull this up and see what LSU's line rank right there. So number 23 in college football, pass blocking line. So again, offensive line grade is high on top of having an elite talent at wide receiver. And then this particular landing spot, to the Raiders, you know, he's going to have Davante Adams, assuming Davante doesn't like say, get me out of here. So right. He's going to have Adams for some period of time. But this is a team that obviously has a lot of rebuilding to do and a lot of issues currently, coaching wise, and who knows what happens there as well. So interesting spot. I don't really have a lot to add to what you're saying. I agree with most of the points that you made about Jaden Daniels here. So, but interesting spot, and it could very well play out that Vegas sits and takes him right here at 14. Again, here we go back to back. Malik Nabers, LSU wideout, goes to the Indianapolis Colts. Interesting fact, Michael Pittman will be a free agent at the end of this season, which could very well, with Anthony Richardson and Malik Nabers, unlock a supernova of potential. What are the thoughts here?
Malik Nabers is an absolute freak. I mean, 3.79 yards per route run. Just that alone is just unbelievable. 89.4 grade versus man. Overall grade, 92.5. He's got 1,400 yards on the year. 17.8 yards per reception on 12 touchdowns. He has literally, he broke out this year. It's unbelievable that you watch some of the tape and you see some of the plays, and he's an explosive receiver, you know, first in deep catches. He's, you know, second in deep yards. He could play inside, outside. This is one of those guys where I think as we get closer to the, you know, draft here in like, you know, 7-8 months, we'll see a conversation kind of turn around and say, I think, you know, Neighbors kind of maybe potentially jumps Rome Odunze, and we've got, you know, Malik Neighbors here in that conversation between him and Marvin Harrison. The talent is through the roof. He's, you know, 6 foot, 200 pounds, you know, prototypical size for the, and he could, again, in the slot, outside, those guys that can do that. I don't want to say that it's like a Jamar Chase type player, but it does kind of look like that with the way he's used, the way he, you know, how dynamic he is. He's got 25 forced missed tackles, which is fourth in college football. I mean, this is a uber dynamic receiver that can, you know, separate. He can beat you deep. He can, you know, make you miss underneath. It, to me, he seems like, especially for where he's going at this point, tied to Anthony Richardson, who's got a cannon for an arm. I mean, sign me up. This is like a smash landing spot for Malik Neighbors.
And you mentioned it. He's one of the few guys that at the top of the class in terms of receiving yards, it's sort of split between the slot and outside. Most of these guys are biased one way or the other. You know, they're 80% out wide, or they're 75% in the slot. So it's really interesting. Then the other part here was the average depth of target, which we had talked about a little bit, but probably a lot of yards after the catchability. I mean, he's number 94 per reception. And I was going to dig up the total targets on him, but amongst this class, yeah, I mean, there's going to be certainly a conversation. Like Marvin Harrison Jr. is locked in most people's minds as the number one, but you know, it depends on where people go. Is he a lock to go to Arizona? Somebody's going to have to trade up really, really high for him to go literally anywhere else at this point in time. So, no, ultra productive. Again, a byproduct of, you know, maybe what we're seeing with a step up in quarterback play, a step up in sort of the evolution of his performance side of things. But two, utility of playing inside and out has proved itself over time at the NFL level, whether it's A.J. Brown, whether it's Justin Jefferson. People forget Justin Jefferson was viewed as exclusively a slot guy because he ran out of the slot like 98% of the time his final year in college. Now we see him outside much of the time. And again, when tough matchups come to town, he goes into the slot for 50, 60% of the game, and he's able to do damage from there as well. So the versatility to understand how to run these routes and play these different positions is going to make him extra valuable, you know, not just to teams, but also for fantasy purposes as well. So it's a great landing spot without Michael Pittman. You see the targets that Pittman's getting already, yeah. And Pittman is a short area guy. Like that is, he is... That's not been, yeah, he's not been downfield. So I think the idea, the dynamic ability of Josh Downs and Malik Neighbors, like suddenly you're starting to see a very explosive potential offense. And wouldn't surprise me if Michael Pittman was took a contract elsewhere. Like it really yeah. Wouldn't if this happened, just to give Indianapolis some flexibility with, you know, cap space to play with if you're not bringing on another receiver. Let's keep going down the list. Okay, so Keon Coleman. A Florida State to the Buffalo Bills. You and I talked about it. If you were going to plant a flag on a guy that could be the tripwire of this class, it would potentially be this player right here.
Yeah. So the problem for me is obviously you've seen the highlight catches. He's a great kid. You know, he's top 20 in contested catches, but he's only got a 37% contested catch rate. There's other guys that have significantly better and they're getting more deep targets. Obviously they probably can separate more. My problem with him is he's never eclipsed more than 798 yards as evident last year. He's transferred around. He's played at Michigan State. I don't think that's really a knock on him, but it's really, he really hasn't done a lot. He's done decently well. This is his, you know, he's playing potentially people are saying this is, you know, his best season. But 45 catches on 74 targets. It's just, to me, the he's got zero drops, so it could be the inaccuracies here. But I'm just concerned with these type of receivers that are the 6'4", 215. He's one of those guys that we talked about this before. He has to test, and if he tests well, then he kind of shows a little bit more than what, you know, why didn't that dynamicism that showed up on the at the combine show up when he was playing, right? Why is he only getting 798 yards or 615 yards? He's got a decent touchdown rate based on yardage, but my concern was and still will be is this just one of those, you know, those slow, you know, big possession receivers? And if so, it's got to go to the right system, right? And if even if he's slow, he's still like it's got to go to the right system where he can get funneled targets. I think he's a really, really he's kind of got the that, you know, that those big type receivers that are ability to catch, you know, make highlight reel catches. Someone like, you know, I can't stop thinking about, even though it's FSU and it's not a great comp, but I think about like someone like Kelvin Benjamin coming out. But Kelvin Benjamin had, you know, 1,000 yards his rookie year, but really kind of couldn't do anything more after that. This is just one of those guys with the yardage, with the yards per reception, average depth of target tied for 162nd. There's just not a lot of dynamism to a player like this, and he puts himself in a small little bucket of receivers that kind of have these kind of, you know, metrics on their profile.
Yeah, if he doesn't test well, as you've mentioned, that is like truly the greatest dagger, because just that underwhelming performance, statistically speaking, it's going to be a struggle. And we've seen this type of stuff happen before. The problem with players like this are, if you have to convince yourself of what you can't see, like if you have to go, well, if X, Y, and Z happen,
right,
then this could be the outcome. If it's never actually been substantiated or validated, it's not in the data. Again, if you're just going to plays on film and going, look at this upside, look at this allure, that's what leads these teams to draft guys again, like currently we're seeing with Quentin Johnston. Like, it leads these teams to burn an early pick on a player that maybe has a lot more developmental issues initially than we thought. They may have upside, but you need guys that can perform today. You need players that are great right now. And you're not spending a top 15 pick, top 20 pick on a guy that just isn't going to deliver for you year one. So I think when we look at these players, and I can almost assure you it's going to come up, he's going to have to test insane, as you mentioned. And if he doesn't, man, It's gonna be quite a dip for him, and especially in the dynasty community, because again, I think they're slowly learning that you just cannot continue to sort of reinvest into these. Again, like where's the production? You said it. This is exactly how my mind works. Oh, you're a good athlete, but you didn't translate it at college, and now we're expected to believe that at the NFL level, you're gonna put it together. Because suddenly we're aware of something that we weren't aware of before, I guess. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, no, it's exactly what I think. I think like this is a guy that kind of, I feel like he goes way higher in the mock drafts by all these services. But I think in the real NFL, I don't think he goes in the first round. So
now this player, Minnesota Vikings at 20, this was the player that when I had alluded to this earlier, this feels like where the New England Patriots should be selecting and the player that they should be taking. But we've got J.J. McCarthy out of Michigan going to the Minnesota Vikings and inheriting what would be an amazing wide receiver group or pass-catching group as a whole. But I think you've got some mixed feelings on McCarthy.
I think the mixed feelings is just the overall production. And I think anybody who's a truther on J.J. McCarthy will state the run-heavy scheme that they run at Michigan. They will also say how well he plays, has played against, you know, higher-level competition, a la someone like Ohio State and stuff like that. I think, again, the concern is, you know, he's up and down on grades. He's never eclipsed more than, you know, 2,700 passing yards. He's, you know, a lot of touchdowns, 18 to 4, 21 to 5, pretty good passer rating. I think this is one of those guys that because the scheme, if the scheme is the reason why, you know, a player like J.J. McCarthy, who's 6'3", 202, kind of, you know, he probably needs to put some more weight on as well to sustain the hits. That's pretty thin at the position. But, you know, he's great at, you know, his deep grade, no pressure grade, you know, intermediate, his grades are great. But Elsie also plays on Michigan, which is, you know, that, you know, top five team in college football. So the offensive line's pretty good. They have a great running game with Blake Corum. But I am concerned with the production that I don't – I see a guy that's just an efficient, you know, passer that can sustain an offense, but I don't see any dynamic play that really gets you excited for someone that could, you know, elevate an offense or, you know, up, you know, sustain someone like Justin Jefferson to the levels that Kirk Cousins has been doing. So it just feels like a guy who can probably run an offense and not make a lot of mistakes. But then you look at the turnover worthy play rate, 3.3%, right?
Yeah.
So if that number, I mean, he's not even attempting the same number of passes that these other top guys are. And look how high 3.3% is for him on his turnover worthy plates. People will say, well, he's lower number of throws, more likely to throw. Yeah. No, this is what he has done throughout 2023. 3.3% is concerning. I have mixed feelings. You'd have to really sell me on him. If this is some guy that has the traits, you know, people were making the argument last year with Will Levis, the arm talent, all that kind of stuff. Will Levis played on Kentucky, right? And Kentucky was good in the SEC, but it was not Michigan good, you know, top five in the Big Ten, right? So I think J.J. McCarthy is probably a good quarterback that can run an offense and that is big and has some traits. But the numbers don't really show it too much. And again, he seems like one of those people that you got to sell you on stuff that you don't see, right? You know, small little snippets of throws that, you know, this is what he can do. Look here. But he's not doing it consistently.
So. Yeah. You look at him currently this year, 42 deep targets on the year, which makes him quarterback 58. The big thing is he's number two in college football in adjusted completion percentage on throws more than 20 yards downfield. Only behind Jaden Daniels, by the way. 10% behind Jaden Daniels, and he's number two, which is pretty insane to think about. And Daniels has over 10 more deep passing targets. But, you know, he's also top five in all of college football in passer rating, throwing deep downfield. And as you mentioned, he's got, you know, a bunch of touchdowns have been attributed to this. Over 10 of them have come on big plays this year. So it seems like the deep ball is again, accuracy, you know, low turnover rate. Like, these are the things that I think the NFL is realizing. Like, you have to usher in safer quarterbacks that can make the big throw. Sometimes it's hard to coax that sort of tendency out of players and it can throttle them. But how many times has the big dynamic athlete failed some of these rosters chasing it? But again, you know, 33rd team has him going at number 20 right now, so not that early. This is starting to get into the speculative sit a year, sit 10 weeks, you know, type first round quarterback. Well, I mean, we saw it with Green Bay with Jordan Love. I think this is about where Jordan Love went, similar to Aaron Rodgers as well. Did he go like 23?
Yep,
or something like that. So again, not that this, there's been a precedent set that when you're sort of on this back part of the first round, sometimes it's sort of an ushering in year. If Kirk Cousins leaves, though, I mean, I guess Dobbs is, is he going to take the job from Dobbs?
Dobbs has played pretty damn well this year that, you know, if he can continue to play pretty well in 2024, which that remains to be seen. We've seen, you know, part of a year for Josh Dobbs. It would be a competition. I think, yeah, he'd have to really blow them. I mean, but they would, it would, the money wouldn't be there. The money would be there, right? Because they get Dobbs for what, a 6th round pick. His salary is probably significantly lower than Kirk Cousins. He sits behind him, like you said, through 6 weeks, and then they usher it in. I just don't know what that looks like, really. Like, what kind of offense does that look like with McCarthy? Like, it's not Kirk Cousins level, right? But it could be. I mean, it's just very far off from what I would think.
It's interesting, though, for dynasty perspective, because you got five quarterbacks.
Right.
You have five first-round quarterbacks in theory right now, right? Like, it's juicy. It's juicy. You could be getting a quarterback at 7. You know, like, I don't know. You could. You could get a quarterback at, who knows, Bowers, if he's in there. In a tight end premium league, you get a quarterback at 8. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
It just depends on how high people are on neighbors. We know Harrison's going to be up there. Again, Bowers is going to be up there. We got one running back-ish maybe in this class. Who knows that people are really like or don't like. Very interesting how this could shake out. Now, again, I think we got really hyped on how many quarterbacks could be in the draft a few years ago. Then we only got Kenny Pickett. So let's keep going here. We're getting close to the end here. Did I miss somebody?
No, I think you have.
Did
Troy
I skip
Franklin
over
on the Cowboys?
Okay, nope. Yeah, maybe. Oh no, that's right, because KC ended up going for the player that I'm thinking. So yeah. Dallas Cowboys number 26, Troy Franklin, Brandon Cooks hitting free agency as they mentioned. 33rd team says that possibly Michael Gallup is a cap casualty, or he's kind of a casualty to himself. CeeDee Lamb is the main weapon here. Troy Franklin out of Oregon goes to play with Dak Prescott in Dallas. What do you think?
It's an interesting, he's an interesting player. PFF has him ranked 64th, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, almost 10 players, 11 players between him and Keon Coleman, who's the receiver who got drafted before him. So PFF is not too high on him at 64 on their big board.
Yeah.
But you got a guy who's 6'3", 187, really small, slender. I mean, at that point, he's had a really good year. 3.6 yards per route run, tied to Bo Nix, 1,200 receiving yards so far on the year, which is amazing. 93 targets, 68 catches, 13 touchdowns, yards per reception, 18. Kind of hit that jump here from 2022 to 2023. Had a decent second year at 891. I think really what he looks like in the NFL maybe is more of he's fourth in deep catches, seventh in deep yards. My only concern would be is, they don't really highlight his intermediate grade on his 2023 comparables. I wonder if they're hiding that from the fact that maybe he's just not really good at the intermediate parts of the field, and he's a really dynamic deep catcher with 13.3 average depth of the target, so maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just underneath and then downfield. This is one of those guys where what kind of player is this, right? He's sort of like, we talked about this, outside of Malik Nabers, everybody is trending towards one side or the other, right? Like, this guy is exclusively an outside guy at 302 wide snaps,
yep,
versus 54 slot. Is this guy's just a deep threat, really, and maybe some catches underneath for screens? Although he's tied for 93rd in screen yards, it's kind of, I'm not sure what to see. His yards per route run are pretty damn good at 3.6, and a decent receiving grade, pretty good against man coverage. This guy, again, like 891 at 2022 is good, but I'm not sure really what to. So yeah, I think I would need to see more of him testing, right? If he's this like dynamic athlete that can win. Again, like, I don't know what, if he projects as an outside receiver exclusively. I would like to see more slot reps. He did play 103 slot snaps in 2022. I don't think this is like a guy that's a one necessarily, but again, we've been, seeing some of these slender receivers succeed so far this year, but I don't know. This guy's kind of perplexing to me. I would have to dive deeper into the data on him.
It's interesting to me. I mean, he's very svelte at 6'3", 185, 190. Then again, this is that classic case. Do you want him playing opposite? And this guy may be a wide receiver two at his ceiling, potentially. Right. Like, anyways, like, this is the thing. If you can't, like Odunze, we can make the argument, hey, whoa, like send him somewhere where he could be the guy, because it's in his profile, he could be the guy. A player that looks like this, that may not necessarily be the case with a guy like Franklin. So maybe playing opposite a guy like CeeDee Lamb would, in theory, unlock some of that ability, because, yes, you are getting a little less talented coverage, mm-hmm. but the targets that CeeDee is seeing currently are so ridiculous. That what's happening, yeah, like he's going to be a 120 target guy, like 115 targets annually. And again, people are going to go, oh, no way, first round receiver, it's impossible. Really? Look at T. Higgins. Again, I bring this up all the time. Look at him. Just look at him. It's a very difficult thing. And again, even with Jordan Addison, it'll be interesting to see how the evolution of this tandem plays out over time. It's just a very difficult hill to ascend. I like the offense, though. Like, I guess if you were going to pick an offense to go to,
yeah,
and you're a guy that doesn't have a wide receiver one ceiling, more than likely, it would be interesting to see him go and play in Dallas and play with Dak Prescott. So I don't hate it, but it's another first-round guy, and this is one of those where it just depends on how comfortable you'll be drafting him when the time comes when it's your turn to pick. And, yes, he's got first-round draft capital, but
yeah. Yeah, I think for him, to me, I think will be always be the biggest problem is if he does go in the first round with that profile, that I would like him more getting him in like the second round versus,
yes,
having to spend a rookie first round pick on him, especially having to be opposite of CeeDee Lamb. But again, this is Cowboys have had a really good success with Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, at finding receivers, and then also, how long is Brandon Cooks on this offense? Is he a free agent? That's probably hit free agency. That's the first thing. So should have looked at that. But it's interesting. Why they could go and take Brandon Cooks up again and sign him to an extension, and have him play again the next year. So if Troy Franklin would have to go here to make it sound better, a first round pick on Dallas, but I don't know if Troy Franklin ends up like on Carolina, still doesn't sound too great. Sounds like this guy kind of looks like a little bit more like DJ Chark a little bit. He's got that slender profile.
He's got that Tycon Thornton body type.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's got the same level of burners. You know, I was going to say though, like where you could make the argument that Malik Nabers boosted Jaden Daniels this year, it feels like the inverse the other way, potentially, where Bo Nix, right, is the reason why we're seeing so much out of Franklin.
Yeah, you could definitely make that argument. It's like you can see like the way the profile of the player and the ability on the metrics, and then you can make the decision like, okay, who is making who better? And that's why I thought, you just even watch some of the film and also the data in general. Malik Nabers is just an unreal wide receiver. Troy Franklin, I don't think even comes close to Malik Nabers, and I think that's why that's the conversation, right? It's like, maybe Bo Nix is that good, and he's making other players better than him. He jumped up from, Bo. It's no question that Bo Nix's ascension also allows Troy Franklin to jump up as well. And it also could just be that this Oregon team is just really, really damn good. Best, number one offensive line, one of the best quarterbacks in college football, and then also one of the better wide receivers in the college football as well.
I think we only have one player left here. So it's your team. You're a Kansas City Chiefs fan, right? So we got Emeka Ibuka going 31 to the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, it's so funny because we talked about this like an episode or two ago where it feels like, if this does happen, like Andy Reid is like, damn it, I'm going to keep taking wide receiver till one of these guys works out, because, we watched it happen with Sky Moore. Then it was, Rashi Rice this year. And now if it's Emeka next year, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, again, we just talked about it. There's a very clear reason why we're seeing maybe a different version of Patrick Mahomes in 2023 than we have many years prior. Is the solution truly rooted in finding a receiver that's going to hit? Or does this just feel like for you as a fan of Kansas City and having your ear to the ground of the media, sound machine over there, does this feel like just wasted capital yet again?
I think it's necessary after watching a lot. I know the question I think I have is the utilization of players that are currently on the roster. Obviously everyone will reference how many drops this receiving core has attributed to. I think they're number one in drops right now in the NFL. I think my question would be, is getting someone like Mbuka, I look at the players that are currently on the roster. I mean, obviously MVS has a contract with $11 million a year to not catch anything. But then you've got they signed Richie James this year, slot receiver. You got Sky Moore, who plays a little outside, but mostly could play the slot receiver. You got Rashee Rice, who profiled as an outside receiver, who's mostly playing in the slot. Mbuga, I think, is a value for a team that could use a slot receiver, but I'm concerned that, like, this is, again, another slot receiver, even if he's 6 foot, 206, who 6'1", 206, that could probably play outside. It's probably because, you know, Marvin Harrison is eating that outside, you know, X role and playing opposite of him, that he's sort of getting overshadowed. But, I mean, as a sophomore, 1,100 yards, 15.6 yards per reception, 10 touchdowns. He was really good last year. I think he's dealt with some injuries and really kind of playing second fiddle in that to Marvin Harrison this year. And I don't know how good, you know, going from CJ Stroud to this new quarterback, how much of a difference that has made. Obviously, in the numbers, it has made a little bit. But this is a guy that I think is probably of value to a team. But I would really like to see potentially Kansas City go and get someone that, you know, is a consistent, you know, elite level talent. And not that he's not. I just think that, you know, you should, if you're Kansas City and you're that desperate for a number one receiver, especially with Kelce being 34 years old, talking about retirement, getting an elite talent, trading up for maybe in the top 10, top 12, and going and getting a no-brainer number one, instead of, you know, kind of throwing darts at guys that, you know, dips in production. And that doesn't take away from Mbuga, because, again, I think he's having a down year. He was really good in 2022. And he's also, last year in 2022, he's, you know, these both years, he's been playing opposite of Marvin Harrison Jr. And how many of these receiving cores have we seen where these guys, you know, you don't, you know, they all say that the other guy is really good, is not putting up the same numbers, right, as the opposite one. And then they, you know, they surge, right? He's an interesting case. I think he's a value to any team that gets him. I think in Kansas City, I just question the fit, because Justin Watson is now getting, you know, 9 targets in a game, and it just baffles me, really, with his career arc and stuff like that. He's an outside receiver with decent athleticism, but really no consistency at production. But long story short, I think he's a good player. I think he's having a down year, but I don't see the fit in Kansas City, especially exclusively playing this slot. But again, if he tests like crazy, then I don't see why anyway he can't play outside outside of the slot and play out wide. So if that's the case and he's one of those things, then I think this is another one of those guys that I think, you know, with Ohio State's pedigree of producing elite wide receivers, I think what the Chiefs need is a consistent player that probably, if he can play inside and outside, and then they can switch between him and Rice, inside and outside, and they can, you know, go between each other and use that sort of dynamism that, you know, and an explosion that Rice has, Mbuga could be, you know, could be the key to unlocking this. Cause I think really what they need right now is a consistent move the chains player. And I don't think they really have that right now. Kelce is sort of getting old, has dealt with injuries this year. I just think that eventually you're going to have to go get another guy that can be the number one in this offense. And I think that you're starting to see the cracks in this whole process.
And he may not go to KC. I mean, it's very possible he doesn't end up in KC.
No.
Which would probably make you happy. I think what people are going to harken back to, if he tests well, all people need to do is flip back to 2022. That's what's going to happen. They're going to look at 2023. They're going to rationalize it away. They're going to go back to 2022. They're going to see the 3.05 yards per out run, over 7 yards, you know, per reception after the catch. They're going to see that he was still playing with talented receivers around him, higher receiving grade per PFF. Like, everything was pointing, arrow trending up in 2022. Then obviously some differences have taken place in 2023. So testing will certainly change this, and, you know, very well may have the frame to be one of these, you know, premier players. He could be the guy in any given offense. So I think at the end of the day, there could be 3 guys, 4 receivers possibly in this group that could ascend to be a playmaker on their own, standalone in an offense. And you just hope for fantasy purposes that they don't necessarily sort of get swallowed up and get thrown into offenses where, again, they're opposite elite players, especially if they have the potential wide receiver one ceiling sort of built into their profile. So All right. Well, that was a marathon episode relative to any other episode that we've done, Alexander. Guys, if you're still watching on YouTube, make sure you hit the like button. If you enjoyed the content, make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss anything in the future. I think we're going to continue doing more draft content and continue to sort of push the draft content towards the dynasty spectrum even tighter, start bringing in some of our own metrics as we deploy those. If you're listening on Spotify or Stitcher or Google or Apple, make sure you guys rate and review the show. It helps us out a lot. We're still trying to pass the footballers. I can't say it with a straight face. Link for the Discord is in the description below. And of course, guys, go over to dynastyrankings.com, sign up there, put in your email. Updates are coming in the near future. I sound like a broken record, but I swear to God, they're coming. So anyways, thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we will be back next week with more draft coverage, I'm sure. And we'll continue to hit on the important NFL aspects. But at this point in time, I think we kind of know who's who. We've done a lot of this information, and if it's very relevant, we're going to hit it, but we're going to start kind of prepping people for what should we be doing with these rookie picks, how can we sort of set ourselves up to position ourselves better to acquire some of these players, who are the landmines, and as Alexander brought up earlier, some of these players we'd rather get in the second round, which means necessarily we would like to avoid them in the first round, so there's some conversation about how to sort of navigate that as well, so we will hit up a lot of this in the future, so we'll see you guys next week on the Dynasty Rankings podcast.